Good afternoon. We have this afternoon 12 AP 1582 CR State versus Andrew J. Matasik. We have a following lineup. 20 minutes for, is it Mr. Gerard?
Gerard.
Representing Mr. Matasik. 5 minutes for Ms. Lamb, Assistant State Public Defender, arguing as amicus. 30 minutes, Christine A. Remington, Assistant Attorney General, arguing for the state. And Mr. Gerard, you're going to take 5 minutes from the bottom. You may proceed.
Good afternoon, Justices. May it please the Court. My name is Jeff Gerard. I represent the defendant appellant petitioner, Andrew Matasik. This case raises the issue of whether the Circuit Court has the discretion to issue an order of expungement under 973.015 of the Wisconsin statutes after a defendant has successfully completed probation. Because the legislature, through the plain language of 973.015, provided the Circuit Court with this discretion, the Court of Appeals decision should be reversed. I'd like to discuss two main arguments today. First, that in any case where a defendant is placed on probation, the Circuit Court simply does have the discretion to wait until a defendant successfully completes probation before ordering expungement. And second, that just in this particular case, because Mr. Matasik was never actually sentenced, was placed on probation and given a withheld sentence, that he was never sentenced, and thus he can still request expungement. Now, 973.015 has a couple of objective criteria that must be met before the defendant is eligible for expungement. I want to go through those briefly. First, the defendant must be under 25 years of age at the commission of the offense. And second, the offense for which the defendant was convicted must be one in which the maximum possible penalty is 6 years or less. In this case, Mr. Matasik was 19 at the time of the offense, and he was convicted of manufacture, deliver THC between 200 and 1,000 grams. The maximum possible penalty for that is 6 years. It's a Class H felony. So he meets all of these objective criteria. His trial counsel did request expungement by the Circuit Court.
When did the trial counsel request expungement?
On the date that the trial court issued probation.
At what is generally called the sentencing hearing?
That's correct, Your Honor.
And what did the trial court say?
The trial court said at that point it was not ready to issue the order of expungement. The trial counsel requested that the Circuit Court take a wait-and-see approach to the case and wait until Mr. Matasik was done with probation, allow Mr. Matasik to come back before the court after he's done with probation and request expungement.
Suppose the sentence had been 5 years.
Probationary sentence, Your Honor?
Oh, not probation. Part in prison, part extended supervision. Would he still be eligible for expungement?
If the trial court had found that society would not be harmed and the defendant would benefit, then yes, I think he would still be eligible for expungement.
But when does the trial court have to make that decision? Because you're saying, oh, if it's probation, then you can do it later. And I'm asking you a broader question. Why don't you say any time there's any sentence? That the trial court can, if they're under 25 and it's a felony less than 6 years, the trial court can wait until he finishes his 5 years of extended supervision plus incarceration.
I believe that you're correct, Your Honor. Under my reading of the statute and under our argument that the defendant could come back after the 5 years after he's done with all of his extended supervision, come back, request the trial court's expungement.
That's your reading. Your reading is much broader than a probation case or this particular withheld sentence case.
That's correct. The second argument I'm going to get to, Your Honor, is a much more narrow argument. I agree with that, Your Honor. His counsel did request the expungement. The circuit court told him...
Maybe.
I'm sorry?
He told him maybe.
He told him...
I'll see.
I'll see. He said, but I don't think that the circuit court, I have the authority to do this, so I have to deny you at this time. Because the court doesn't believe it has the authority to issue an order of expungement after he's done with probation. Obviously, Mr. Matusek disagrees with that ruling, and that's why we believe this should be reversed. Now, we believe this because the legislature provided the circuit court with this discretion to issue an order of expungement. And obviously, any time we're going to do a statutory interpretation case, this court has ruled that we must look at the plain language of the statute. And the plain language of the statute, I'd like to just read the operative portion here, says...
Make sure you refer to what section or subsection you're reading.
Yes, Your Honor. It's 973.015, subsection 1, sub C. The court may... order at the time of sentencing that the record be expunged upon successful completion of the sentence if the court determines the person will benefit and society will not be harmed by this position. Now, the use of the term may order at the time of sentencing demonstrates that the legislature provided discretion to the circuit court in a number of ways, and one of those ways is the timing of the order of expungement. The legislature did not write the court must order at the time of sentencing or the court shall order at the time of sentencing. It specifically used the term may, and this may denotes discretion. That discretion includes the timing of when to order the expungement. I believe any other reading, including the reading that the state urges in this case, is not akin to what the statute actually says. The legislature, as I stated before, could have used shall, and the circuit court, even if the legislature did use shall or must instead of may, would still have a very large amount of discretion about whether to order expungement. The circuit court would still have to make a finding of whether the defendant will benefit by the expungement order or whether society will not be harmed by the disposition.
Counselor, do you know anything about the statutory history that underlies 973.015?
I don't know much about the statutory history, Your Honor. Expungement, I don't believe, was available before 1975 when the statute was initiated. At that point, and I think the state does point this out in their brief, it was the Wisconsin had a pardon system. Obviously, we still do have that, but that was the way for defendants to seek to expunge the record, I guess, by pardon.
Counsel, how do you explain 973.0151B?
Except as provided in part...
No. The court shall order at the time of sentencing the record be expunged upon successful completion if the offense was a violation of 94208. This is 1B.
Yes, Your Honor. Well, it seems like, and that statute, this court shall order at the time of sentencing, I believe the legislature did that specifically for, if we keep reading along the lines of that statute, there's a list of specific statutes that the legislature wanted expunged, I guess, without providing the circuit court with more discretion beyond that. So the circuit court shall order at the time of sentencing the record be expunged upon successful completion of the sentence if the offense was a violation of, and then it lists 942.08, a number of different subsections. And at that point, the court would have to find that the person was under 18 when the defendant committed the offense. So my reading of that statute was that, and I believe 942.08 is some sort of statute about a defendant viewing I think a nude photograph or a nude person without that person's consent. I'm not sure about that, but I believe that's what I read. And the legislature, I think, wanted, for some reason, that particular offense to be expunged for someone who was under 18 at the time that person committed it. That's how I read that offense. That's subsection.
What I'm trying to get at is, as I read this 1B, it seems to say if certain conditions are met, the court has no discretion but to expunge or whatever the word is. Whereas in the language under 1A, there seems to be discretion.
Yes, I absolutely agree, Justice Prosser. Absolutely. There's much more discretion under 1A than there is under 1B.
Doesn't that account for the word may?
That certainly does somewhat count for the word may, and I also think that discretion that you're talking about, Justice Prosser, includes the timing of the order, when to execute the order. And I think the legislature specifically used the word may to denote much more discretion about when to order the expungement and who to give expungement to.
Well, aren't you reading those words out of the statute then? First of all, under this statute, 973.015, it's already discretionary because the court has to determine that the person will benefit and society will not be harmed. So that's why they have discretion, right? Because I can say, hey, you're not going to be benefit from this, or society is going to be harmed. Either way, I don't have to do both, right?
Right.
I may have to do both. But anyhow, so there is discretion, right? So even if you had shall in the first part, it's still discretionary. You shall do it if you want to do it. If you think this is helpful, you shall do it. But that the discretion is in the tail end of that statute. So the question is, it seems to me, does may refer to the timing? Or does may refer to the whole thing? That is, the timing and whether you want to do it. But, as Justice Prosser said, B is you're going to order it if he's 18 and it's a violation of 942.08. No discretion, right?
Correct, Your Honor.
Fit the criteria, that's it. But that says order at the time of sentencing. How do you read that? Does that mean when he's sentenced?
No, I read that as the judge may order it at the time of sentencing. The circuit court may, it may do that if the circuit court feels it's necessary. However, the may in front of order at the time of sentencing, I also read as, and Chief Justice, you kind of indicated to it before, there's discretion in the first part of that statute, and then there's the secondary discretion in the second part of the statute, where even if the word shall was inserted for may, the circuit court still has an enormous amount of discretion to determine whether society won't be harmed or whether...
The issue in this case is the discretion about the timing.
Yes.
Or does these statutes require... Both of them say at the time of sentencing, right?
Right, Your Honor.
One says shall at the time of sentencing, and the other one says may at the time of sentencing. But do you read B to mean after sentencing, when he's finished? Or doesn't it matter because he has to do it?
I don't think it matters because he's required to do it. That's correct, Your Honor. I think may in Part A, what we've been talking about, denotes timing. And I think it also denotes whether the circuit court has to do it. It just is an overall discretionary term. And I think what's helpful in, I guess, viewing the statute is this court has ruled that we must look at the context of the statute. So looking at the context of 973.015 gives us two propositions. One, that the legislature provided the circuit court with overall great discretion with regard to all expungement, and two, that that discretion includes the ability to order the expungement after a sentence or after probation. The context, it is within the sentencing chapter of the chapters of the statutes. 973 is labeled sentencing. And this court's ruled numerous times that the circuit court has an enormous amount of discretion in all aspects of sentencing. And the legislature knows that, and they place this portion in that part of the statute.
Well, what's the public policy if you put it in the at the time of sentencing versus after it's the sentence is completed? Don't you want to give the defendant information that if you behave, this is the carrot. If you don't behave, this is the stick. And if you wait until after he's completed or she's completed it, then you're not, maybe that's giving him a carrot and stick. But isn't it better to say, hey, you fulfill these obligations, you're out of here. You've got a clean record. Isn't that a carrot and a stick to them if you do that at sentencing? And the same thing has to be. You do that at sentencing, the person knows what the deal is. As long as he fulfills, right, the person's underage, and successful completion of the sentence still needs to do that. So why shouldn't this be interpreted to say to the to require it at sentencing so the person knows what the scene is and can comply?
Well, Your Honor, I think the person still, if we wait until probation is successfully completed and the circuit court says, I will consider probation. If we read it the way I'm urging this court to read it, that the circuit court says, well, we're going to wait and see how you do. I think the defendant still has that carrot at that point.
He does, but the defendant can say, he's never going to do it. I know he's a tough sentencer. He's never going to do it. I'll never get the benefit of this. The heck with it all. I'm doomed. Where if he says, I'm going to do it, you be good, then there's a promise by the state, and then the state has to keep it. You keep your end, the state has to keep its end.
Well, I think if the state makes the reading that I'm urging, the state can still offer that as part of a plea negotiation and say, we're going to either encourage expungement or we're not going to object to expungement, you know, after the probationary term. So the state can still make that bargain. And I think the carrot is still the same, and perhaps the stick as well. I mean, if someone is on probation and they know that, hey, I have a really good shot to get expunged after I'm done with probation, they may work extremely hard, maybe even harder than they would if they know that it's just a shall, because maybe they know that now they need to go above and beyond what only the terms and conditions are of probation. So
I have another question for you. I'm concerned, and maybe I should address this to the amicus, and if I should, you don't have to respond to it. We can ask Ms. Lane. From the amicus's brief and from my general knowledge, I think there is not uniformity across the state as to what judges are doing. And what is the effect of holding that judges can do this after the sentence is completed on retroactivity for judges who have, or the other way that we hold against you, for people who have already been sentenced with expungement or not?
Sure. Your Honor, I think it's going to depend on a case-by-case basis, and I guess what would have to happen is if, like what happened in this case, you have the defendant would end up having to order the sentencing hearing transcript, read the transcript, and determine whether the court at that time made a finding of whether the defendant is going to benefit or society won't be harmed, or whether counsel at that time asked the circuit court, Your Honor, may I ask for expungement after probation? If the circuit court said, I'd like to do that, but I can't, like they did in this case, I believe that it probably would be retroactive because this court's decision would reverse that ruling at that point.
So but, somebody can come in and say, you didn't expunge it then, you should have expunged it now.
I think it depends on the case. If the circuit court judge said, absolutely, I'm not, if the circuit court said, I am absolutely not going to expunge this because no matter what, I think society is going to be harmed.
That's okay. They've exercised the discretion. The end.
Right.
But if the court here declined to order expunction at the time of the hearing, finding that although expunction would benefit the defendant, society would be harmed. Why isn't that part of your analysis?
He did say that, Justice Ziegler. However, he said, the circuit court judge here said, I would like to come back and look at this. The circuit court.
The person, based upon what I see then, but the way I read the statute, I have to evaluate him where he is as of today's date.
Yes, and I believe the circuit court said, I want to come back. I don't want to make this ruling right now, and I'm not using the exact words, but the judge said, I would like to make this ruling later, but I don't believe the statute allows me to, and I have to make this ruling today, but I'd like to come back later. I see my time is up. Thank you.
Well, are there any further questions? You have 5 minutes in rebuttal, sir. Caitlin Lamb, Assistant State Public Defender, representing Amicus.
Please, the court. My name is Caitlin Lamb. I'm speaking on behalf of the Office of the State Public Defender. There are 2 points that I would like to make. First, the State Public Defender agrees with Attorney Girard's interpretation of the expunction statute, but would like to clarify how this statute will work in practice. And the second point is that the state's interpretation of the statute will cause problems. First, the statute says may order at the time of sentencing. This means that at the sentencing hearing, the court can find, one, that the defendant meets the requirements for expunction, and the court can then grant expunction. Two, the defendant does not meet the requirements for expunction and can deny expunction. And three, the defendant might benefit from expunction, but the court would like more information and will defer the final decision until after the completion of probation or the sentence. This interpretation is consistent with the plain language of the statute and the circuit court's discretion and inherent authority to decide when and how it will resolve the matters on its docket.
If you have inherent authority, why do you need the statute at all?
Well, we believe that as we indicated in the brief, we are specifically arguing that there is inherent authority to control the docket, but we are not taking a position on whether or not there is inherent authority to order expunction. There is a case on point in the interest of EC, which involves whether or not the court has inherent authority to expunge police records. However, as I stated, we aren't taking a position on whether or not.
But that was police records, not court records.
Correct. There is no case to my knowledge on whether or not a court has the inherent authority to expunge the court records. And so that was not something that we briefed, and in this particular case, it's not something we are taking a position on.
Okay.
But we do believe that there is inherent authority to control the docket. And so this supports our interpretation that the court has discretion at the time of sentencing to defer the final decision until after completion of probation or the sentence. The second point that the state public defender would like to make is that the state's interpretation of the expunction statute causes problems. Some circuit courts have interpreted the statute the way that the state public defender reads it, that could make a preliminary finding on expunction, but defer that decision until later, after the defendant has completed probation or the sentence. And these circuit courts have told the defendant they will consider expunction after. And under the state's interpretation, these defendants are no longer able to get expunction because the court failed, the circuit courts failed at the time of sentencing to grant an unqualified decision on expunction. The state asserts that defendants can just file motions for sentence modification based on a new factor for those who were told the decision could be deferred until after probation or sentencing. However, this is not a solution. How are defendants going to know that they can bring motions for sentence modification based on a new factor? They do not have attorneys at this stage, and the state public defender cannot appoint counsel to represent them to bring sentence modification motions based on a new factor. Additionally, the expunction test is much different than the new factor test. Expunction simply requires that the court would find that the defendant would benefit and society is harmed. Adding in this whole new factor analysis is making it much more complicated and complex for these pro se litigants. They'd have to argue that, one, it was a fact or facts that were not known at the time, and two, that this was somehow highly relevant to the imposition of the sentence. And this will simply allow the courts to determine that this was not relevant and not a new factor for sentence modification. And so for these reasons, the court should interpret the statute as the state public defender is interpreting it.
Any questions?
Thank you.
Just a minute. Justice Prosser has a question. Comment.
Could you explain certificate of discharge? Does every prisoner get that at the end of probation? What I'm really trying to get at is some of the analysis in the hemp case and how that applies to your argument here.
So since that does deal with the second subsection of the statute, in this particular case, we are not taking a position on it. That may be something that we would take a position on in the hemp case. But in some respects, I will say, however, it does indicate the fact that in the hemp case, the circuit court did have discretion then to deny expunction at a later date after sentencing, does lend some support to our argument that the court could make a preliminary finding at the sentencing hearing and then make the decision much later on.
Is there a time limitation on applying for expunction? I mean, does something have to happen on the day the defendant is sentenced? Does the circuit court have to leave the door open? Or, I mean, suppose this subject never came up at all at the time of sentencing.
Well, I believe that the statute does not provide a specific time limit for when expunction could be ordered. And it does appear in the hemp case that the Court of Appeals was interpreting it that expunction must be applied for within a reasonable time period. But once again, I do not believe that is the case before us. And as a statute, at least at issue here, there is nothing prohibiting a court from deferring the decision on expunction until the time of sentencing until the completion of the probation or the sentence. There's no specific time limit.
Does the defendant have to request it or at sentencing to preserve it? Is it forfeited or waived if the defendant doesn't say, I want expunction? I recognize, Judge, you don't have to give it to me today, but I want it. And I'm going to be back as soon as I finish my sentence. Does it have to be protected that way?
Well, I do not believe that the statute requires that the defendant request it. I believe the court could also request it. The state public defender's interpretation, though, is that there must be some type of either a preliminary finding or reference that the court is considering expungement and is deferring that decision.
So your answer is that something has to be done at sentencing to preserve the right to decide later.
That is correct. The court could find, for instance, that it may benefit the defendant to order expunction, but could hold off on the finding as to whether or not granting expunction was harmful to society until...
Where does the statute say that it has to be preserved at the sentencing?
I do not believe that the statute says it has to be preserved. However, that is our interpretation.
What does at the sentencing mean in the context of a withheld sentence and a defendant is placed on probation, as we have here? We have there's plenty of authority for the proposition that probation is not a sentence. So I look at the statute, for instance. I look at 973.015 sub 2, and it uses the language, upon successful completion of the sentence, the detaining or probationary authority shall issue a certificate, etc. But I say, a probationer, that's not a sentence. So what does it mean there, upon successful completion of a sentence? What is a sentence, or what is a sentencing hearing?
We are not taking a position on as to whether or not a sentencing hearing includes when the defendant received probation or whether or not the defendant did in fact receive a sentence.
If a defendant is placed on probation, sentence is withheld, and that is done on January 1st, and the defendant violates a term of probation and is brought in on July 1st for sentencing, which one of those two, the January 1st or the July 1st, is the sentencing hearing?
For the purposes of this argument, we aren't taking a position on which counts or whether or not one counts as a sentencing hearing and the other doesn't.
Well, so sub two says a person has successfully completed the sentence, okay? And that refers back to, I assume, the prior subsections that talked about satisfactorily completing the sentence, right? Completion of the sentence. Successful completion of the sentence is in 1A. Successful completion of the sentence is in 1B. Now, in 2, we're going to define what successfully completing the sentence is. So, you successfully complete your sentence if you haven't been convicted subsequently, right?
That is correct, Your Honor.
And if on probation hasn't been revoked and you've satisfied the conditions. Well, suppose you're sentenced to prison. Doesn't that fit under if the person has not been convicted of a subsequent offense? One assumes he's out of prison, right?
That is correct.
So as the legislature has defined sentence in 973.015, it includes probation. Because the phrase being defined is as successfully completed the sentence, and that means probationer and non-probationer. So the concept that probation is not a sentence doesn't quite fit with subsection 2 as this is defined. You know what I'm asking?
That is correct.
All right. And we have another case on a certificate of discharge where persons discharged from probation, even though the Department of Correction should not have given that discharge. So do you know what the answer to Justice Process question? Does, as soon as you're off probation, does everyone get a discharge piece of paper?
That I do not know.
Okay, that's fine. I don't either.
What I was sort of thinking of is, in a traditional case, the judge gives this benefit at the time of sentencing, but it doesn't take effect until the defendant completes his sentence. And there's some document that is supplied that indicates, yeah, you've completed your sentence successfully. Does every sentence discharge do more than simply discharge? Does it say, and he's been wonderful during the time he was on probation?
That I do not know, but I would be happy to look into that, and I could provide a letter to the court regarding that question.
Because the last sentence says, if you've been imprisoned, says the detaining authority, which I assume is the DOC, shall also forward a copy of the certificate of discharge.
Yes, that's correct.
Do you want this attorney to check into that?
Probably do that.
I think it's necessary. Okay, fine. Thank you. Don't, unless the court asks.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We'll get the answer right here, I bet.
Ms. Remington, representing the state of Wisconsin.
May it please the court. I'm Assistant Attorney General Christine Remington, and I represent the state of Wisconsin in this case. The state is asking this court to affirm the Court of Appeals decision and decide that the circuit court must exercise its discretion regarding expunction at the time of sentencing. And it's also our position that the term sentencing refers to sentencing in a generic sense and includes situations where the court would place someone on probation and withhold sentence. Our argument is based primarily on the plain language of the statute. That's by including the phrase at the time of sentencing, the legislature sent a clear signal that that means exactly that, that at the time of sentencing, the court has the discretion to order expunction, but that does not have that authority afterwards. To read the statute the way that that the defendant is arguing, the term at, or the words at the time of sentencing wouldn't need to be there. Those become superfluous, and then the statute could read that the court may order that the record be expunged upon successful completion of the sentence if the court determines that the person will benefit and society will not be harmed. But that's the interpretation they're urging, and including that term at the time of sentencing sends a clear signal that that is what the legislature meant. I think there are clear policy reasons why the legislature would have intended that. I think that the Chief Justice brought up one of those, that it's the circuit courts are giving the defendant the benefit of the doubt by saying, if you behave on probation, then we will, and then at the end you're guaranteed that this will happen. But by waiting, the defendant's sort of in this limbo. Well, maybe I'll go above and beyond and do extra, but maybe no matter what I do, the court's not going to do it. So I think that the legislature sent that that signal that the decision had to be made at the time of sentencing. I think if...
Counsel, what about the middle ground espoused by the amicus? That is, at the time of sentence, or maybe even what you have here, arguably, at the time of sentencing, the trial court said, not now. I'm combining the facts and the argument. Not now, but come back later at the end. What prohibits a court from doing that?
It's our position that the court has to make the decision at the time of sentencing, and part of that is because under your scenario, I'm not sure how the court would enter a judgment of conviction saying that this is something we're leaving open. I think that that's something that to have the judgment, it should say that it's you're being sentenced to probation or being placed on probation, and then and not be able to allow to leave that decision open.
Well, no, the judgment of conviction would say, you know, the form, whatever the form says, and then withheld sentence, place the defendant on probation for 6 months, fines, and whatever else he has to, or she has to pay. And then it can say, and the court will determine upon completion of probation whether this should be expunged. I mean, that'll be in the judgment of conviction.
Sure. I don't think there's any language in that statute that contemplates that. And I think the legislature sent a policy that they want that it wanted this decision to be made up front.
Well, we
I'm
were
a firm
saying,
excuse me,
go ahead, Justice.
I'm a firm believer of judicial authority. And so if this is something as a circuit court judge everyone wanted, what would keep them, the parties, from saying, okay, if we have to do it at time of sentencing, judge, let's go through the charade. We agree this is what we'll have to do if we take the state's interpretation. We'll go through the whole thing. And then at the end of successful completion of probation, we're going to make a motion to vacate the sentence. All on agreement. And then the sentence is vacated. Now you're there for resentencing. And now at the time of sentencing, the judge is going to expunge. What's to prohibit that?
I don't think that there's anything that prohibits that from happening. And I think that that's one of the solutions that could be out there for people who were told at sentencing, I'm going to leave this open, and the people that are referred to in the amicus, that this isn't a decision the court wants to make right now and that they come back for a resentencing. I think that that would need to be an official resentencing hearing, but I also understand that if the state's not objecting and the defendant's asking for it and the court's doing it, if the court does it, there's no aggrieved party and nothing stopping the court from doing that. I don't think the court has inherent authority to expunge convictions. I think that's something that the public defender's brief alludes to, but they don't take that position. I did find an attorney general opinion from 1981 that says that circuit courts have no inherent authority to expunge convictions outside of 973.015, and that's for what that's worth. It says that there isn't inherent authority as far as expunging convictions.
Ms. Remington, I'm looking at the judgment of conviction here in its form, and it's for the sentence is withheld and probation is ordered, and it doesn't have a box that says I'm going to expunge or I'm not going to expunge.
Okay.
I'm sure there are several different forms of conviction, obviously, and is there any form that you know of a conviction where there's a box that says, yep, we're going to expunge if he's a good boy or we're not going to expunge? Because there are other things here on this. There's a risk reduction sentence box. There's a eligible for challenge incarceration program box, eligible for earned release box. So was there a box somewhere on a conviction?
I don't think there is a box, and I think unlike some of those other things, circuit courts aren't required to consider expunction at the time of sentencing. It's something that they're required to do it if the defendant asks for it, and they can do it in the exercise of discretion, but that courts aren't required to do it. And I don't actually know what it would look like on a judgment of conviction, if it would be in the notes section or...
They could add supplemental material that would say... But I'm just curious, then, how does the Department of Corrections know if they've been sentenced and that it's going to be expunged, and maybe they don't have to know.
Yeah, I'm not sure the answer to how the Department of Corrections knows. I do think that that hemp case that that came out at the beginning of this month, the 2013 AP 1163, seemed to say that it wasn't the Department of Corrections. They didn't have the burden to forward this discharge certificate to the circuit court to get expunction, that was a duty that the defendant had. So maybe in this case, the defendant is the one, or in any case where expunction is granted, the defendant's the one who has to take action.
Counsel, in your first response to Justice Bradley's question, you said that the judge is making the decision at the time of sentencing. Now, my interpretation has always been that the court is making a determination regarding the eligibility of someone for expunction, and it's based on the two-factor test that your opposing counsel articulated earlier. But that the ultimate decision is made at the completion of the sentence, when the judge is presented with some form of documentation indicating that the one who had been sentenced lived up to his or her end of the bargain. Mm-hmm. So it's not really a decision at the time. It's a determination of eligibility so that everyone can go into the next phase, the phase where the defendant completes his or her sentence, on equal footing, with equal knowledge, so that everybody knows what is going to happen at the end of the sentence so long as compliance is made. I think that's what you meant when you said decision, but I am not sure.
I think that the way the statute is written, that yes, the circuit court would do what you were saying, would make someone eligible for expunction at the time of sentencing. But then I think that upon successful completion of the sentence, I'm not sure that the court under the statute has discretion at that point. If the guy comes to him and says, "Here, I followed the conditions of my probation and I've been discharged."
I didn't say discretion. I said determination.
Okay.
And it doesn't have to be a very complex decision-making process. It can be a binary determination. Yes, the defendant did what the defendant should have done, or no, they didn't.
Yes, I think that procedure is one that can be followed and should be followed. I think that, I think the hemp case seemed to say that, I'm not sure in that case because they found that the defendant didn't meet his burden by forwarding the discharge certificate, but I'm not sure that there's anything that requires the circuit court to have any sort of hearing at that time. They could make that determination on paper and just...
Again, I didn't say that there would be a hearing.
I'm just trying to expand on what I'm saying can happen. And I think that part of the way you're saying that your understanding is an efficient way to do it. You have the sentencing hearing. You make the person eligible. They follow their terms of their probation and forward the discharge certificate to the circuit court, and the circuit court gets to make that determination.
What's the determination?
The determination. At the end of the proceeding? I guess she's asking, what is the determination to be made at the end of sentencing?
I think if the person has completed the probation successfully or completed, I'll read the language exactly, upon successful completion of the sentence, then I think that the person, the record, is expunged.
I'm confused. And this is my confusion. I understand you agreeing with Justice Gableman's position. And actually, I like that. I mean, there's some resonance to that position. But I did not understand your argument before to be consistent with his position. So maybe I'm just confused. I, either by the question or the answer, there is a difference. To be eligible for expungement under this statute. You have to be under 25 years of age and under 6 years or less exposure. The way I understood the question was that if the judge determines the person is eligible, 23 years old and 3 years exposure, so the way I understood the question was that was what is decided initially, and then later, whether or not the person is going to be given expungement, being entitled to it, or meeting the qualifications seems to me different. It's a threshold question to whether or not the judge is going to give expungement or authorize it. So what is your position? Are you in agreement with, at the time of sentencing in a generic sense, the judge first looks and says 25 years or less, 6 years or less, person meets the qualifications. Is it okay then for the judge to say, but I'm not sure I want to give it now. I'll wait until later to decide. Is that okay or is that not okay?
I don't believe that's okay under the statute. I think under the statute, the court has to make the determination that the person is of the correct age and convicted of the crime that qualifies. But then at the sentencing hearing, the court has to determine if the person will benefit and if society will not be harmed. And if the court, under its discretion, decides that, then okay, it goes to the maybe I wasn't clear earlier. That's my position.
No, I was just
that's why I asked you what determination was at the end. So the judge will say at sentencing, you're 25, you're getting less than 6 years, I think it won't harm the public, and I think you'll benefit. Therefore, I will expunge if you satisfactorily complete your sentence using the standard terms of the statute, right?
Yes.
Okay. 5 years pass, or 2 years, whatever it is. He's on probation. Now, the department is supposed to send a certificate to the court. What does the court do?
I think then that's when we go into 973.015 sub 2, where it says a person has successfully completed the sentence, and then someone has to send the certificate of discharge to the court of record, and that shall have the effect of expunging the record. And I believe that there's no discretion at that phase.
There's no determination then.
Yes.
It's automatic if they get the right papers that it's been satisfied. And because it's written shall have the effect of expunging, someone has to do it. It's not out of thin air. Somebody has to remove that record, put it in a sealed file,
yes,
away. And that's either going to be the clerk's office or the practice in the clerk's office might be to get a judge to sign off, even though there's no hearing. Mm-hmm. As such, it's automatic at that time.
There's no discretion under sub 2. It uses the word shall, and if the person has the certificate that says I behaved, then that's our position, is that. And it doesn't happen automatically, and that's why the certificate of discharge shall be forwarded to the court before, and then you're right, someone has to physically remove the record. And the state's position is that the discretion on whether society will be harmed and the person will be benefited has to be exercised at that sentencing hearing. And it's our position that to read it any other way would be to ignore that phrase.
Because it's surplusage otherwise. Because
yes,
if you can do it at any time, you can just take those words out.
Yeah, under the defendant's reading, those words aren't needed in that. And I think one of the things that lends support to our argument, we believe that the language is plain, but the fact that the legislature selected a different procedure for juveniles, when a juvenile disposition is expunged, it's a different procedure, and that's under Statute 938.355 sub 4M. And that procedure is very similar to the procedure that Mr. Matejczyk would like, and that's where after the person serves the adjudication, they satisfactorily complete that, then the court makes the decision at that point on in a juvenile adjudication. And the fact that the court or the legislature included the term at the time of sentencing indicates that they meant to have two different things. They knew the system of come back to us, tell us you've been good, and there are policy reasons behind that would benefit there, but they chose a different policy, and that policy is the one that the state believes is correct under this statute.
How does the court know that the probationer has satisfied the conditions of probation?
I believe that this certificate of discharge is what will give the court the proof that this person has satisfied the conditions of probation. And
let's just say the condition of probation is that the defendant should not drink, and the defendant does drink, but it's not revoked. How do we know? Suppose a condition of probation is you're going to pay restitution of $42,000, and the defendant has paid $21,000, but not the other $21,000. Is that satisfying the condition of? I'm trying to get at how does the court really know what that phrase means and whether the requirements have been met?
If there's unpaid restitution, it comes back to the court for a judgment to be entered under the statute. I mean, there are requirements in the probation statute that you're probably going to reference, right?
Sure. That if for the unpaid restitution, for something like the drinking while on probation, if that's in violation, I don't know that there's a way that the court can know that. If the person isn't revoked and is discharged from probation, I'm not sure that the court would really ever know 100% that this person complied with all of the conditions of their probation. But if the Department of Corrections issues a discharge certificate, I think that the court can rely on that to say that this person successfully completed their probation. Maybe not up to the standard that, maybe they would have violated some rules, but successful completion of the sentence seems to be your discharge from probation without revocation and without committing a new crime and those sorts of things.
If you can't trust the Department of Corrections, who can you trust?
That sounds like a good attitude to have. I think that.
Thought you'd like that.
The state understands that the amicus is arguing that there's a bunch of people out there who were told something different than our position. Something, come back to us, say you've complied with your conditions of probation, and I'll consider expunction at that point. And the fact that there are people like that out there, I think, isn't a reason not to interpret the statute under the plain language currently. There probably does need to be some sort of accommodation for people like that, and I suggested sentence modification on my brief as a way for those people to obtain relief if they were told something different. And, well, I know that the court would have the option to say that this wasn't highly relevant to the sentence, but if a circuit court said really wanted to consider expunction with a defendant that they really thought deserved this second chance that is contemplated in the statute, I think that would be a mechanism that would allow them to obtain that. Resentencing is another possibility where, as you said, you could just vacate the sentence and have a resentencing at that point, order expunction, as you said, Justice Bradley. I think that there are ways that this court could fashion a remedy for those people out there, but I don't think that's a reason not to interpret the statute correct based on the plain language at this point, and to require this decision to be made at sentencing and not to be able to and not allow courts to just sort of hold this open and hold it over the person out there. And I think that one of the other important policy things to consider is that expunction is not meant to be used for every offender who's under the age of 25 and who commits a crime with an exposure less than 6 years. Those people are eligible, but then there's still the criteria the court has to look to to exercise its discretion to make sure that society will not be harmed and to make sure that the person will benefit, because it's not a remedy that the legislature intended for every defendant out there.
Whatever decision this court makes, can it make it prospectively, sunburst it, say it only applies in the future? Because there are ramifications. For example, the statute says if the conviction has been expunged, you can't use it to attack credibility, right? So maybe this DA really needs this attack on credibility and says, well, this expungement was not correct, that the judge, whatever our decision is, this wasn't done right. Can the DA say, well, collaterally attack this expunction and say, hey, not expunged? You can see it right on the record. You don't need any testimony, any evidence. It's right on the record of this other case. Therefore, I should be able to use this. So, to me, I know that everybody says, when I think this or say that, well, no one's going to object because everybody agreed the first time, so you don't have anyone hurt. Well, you got a new DA now, 5 years later, and she needs something on a record that's been expunged for whatever reason. Do you know what I mean? So it does have ramifications.
Yeah, I know what you mean. I think that in a case like that where the record's been expunged and the conviction is final, I think the finality of that conviction would stand. I don't know how you could open back up the resentencing under those circumstances on a final conviction. And so I think you could have it be prospective in that manner. I also think that the way circuit courts are doing it right now is, since there seems to be more of a piecemeal, some are doing what this court did and said, the statute says I don't have authority to wait, I'm not waiting, and some are waiting. I think that you have sort of unequal situation, and that this court, that's why we're asking this court to say that it must be done at sentencing so that it's uniform across all of the counties and all of the circuits. Thank you.
Are there any other questions? If not, thank you, counsel. Ms. Gerard?
Your Honors, I'd just like to talk about the sentence modification argument as another remedy that the state just spoke about. I don't think that that would be a remedy in this case for someone coming back to look for expungement. There is a Court of Appeals case, State versus Saccio, and I'm sorry if I'm butchering that name, S-C-A-C-C-I-O, that says that rehabilitation is not a new factor. So there would have had to be something at the original sentencing for the something that the circuit court wasn't told about or that the defendant didn't know for the defendant to be able to come back on a sentence modification.
Counselor, what about if the court said, well, I'm not going to do this now, but I'd like to consider it later, and then we come out and say, oh, no, you can't consider it later. What about a motion to vacate the sentence because the court thought it could do something that the law doesn't permit it to do, and then to ask for resentencing based on that ground?
Your Honor, I think if the defendant relied on that representation at a plea hearing and said, for example, the defense attorney advises his client, this is how this particular circuit judge interprets the statute, you're going to be able to do this, he advises his client of that, the circuit court judge does that. This court comes down and says you can't do that. I think at that point the defendant could move to withdraw his guilty plea and
start again.
And start over, yes. Mm-hmm. I think that that's possible.
Well, we have cases that say everybody is under the misimpression of what the sentence is, and it's only a five-year difference between the real sentence and what they all think it's a sentence. Hey, can't start again. Can't withdraw your plea. So, I mean, you got problems of how.
It certainly would create problems, absolutely, Your Honor. I think the recent Court of Appeals decision in Hemp is instructive, and obviously it's not binding on this court, but, you know, it's kind of a reverse case of maybe what we're talking about here, where the defendant got off of, sounds like he successfully completed probation, and then didn't file the necessary expungement petition until a year after he successfully completed it, completed the probation, and within that year's time period picked up new charges. And the Court of Appeals in that case ruled that while it was the defendant's burden to forward the discharge certificate to the circuit court, it was obviously the detaining authority had to give him the discharge certificate, but he had to forward it, and he didn't do it within a reasonable amount of time. And that was one reason they denied the expungement petition. And the second reason is because he picked up these new charges. And so the Court of Appeals in that case recognized that the court retained its discretion after the original sentencing hearing had happened.
Has a petition for review been filed in Hemp?
I don't know, Your Honor, if a petition for review has been filed. I'm sorry.
Okay. I can look it up.
So the other thing I think I didn't mention the first time is in plain language analysis, this court has indicated that looking at the purpose of 973.015 is also important. And the purpose, as noted in the Court of Appeals case, State versus Anderson back in 1991, was that to shield youthful offenders from the harsh consequences of a criminal conviction. And kind of jointly with that, to make sure society's not going to be harmed, the best position a circuit court can be in to make those determinations is after someone has been done with probation, after the circuit court can see how that person has done on probation. And so I think that our interpretation of the statute best gives purpose or supports the purpose of the statute the best. So looking at the purpose and context of 973.015, in every case where defendant is placed on probation, the circuit court does have the discretion to order expungement after probation has ended. The plain language of the statute and the legislature's use of the term may all support this proposition.
Counsel, another factor whenever a court imposes a sentence or withholds a sentence in probation is, of course, rehabilitation. And the court will set any number of conditions of probation, including many times no alcohol. But probation departments that I've worked with and have observed recognize that relapse is part of recovery, and they're not looking necessarily to revoke people. So isn't it another reason for the determination of eligibility for expunction to take place at the initial sentencing hearing to provide incentive to the individual to say, I think, to provide certainty as to what will happen and to say, look, as long as you follow all of these conditions, you go through these hoops, and the judge, as you know, our trial court judges have tremendous, tremendous latitude as to what they're going to order as conditions of probation. And sometimes they can be rather onerous. But what better incentive can a court provide? I mean, what better carrot? It's always, you know, jail. But what better positive incentive can the court provide than to say, if you do all these things, your record will be expunged?
It's a terrific incentive, Justice Gableman. There's nothing in my reading that stops the court from doing that.
But why? I understand that. But wouldn't it make more, wouldn't it comport more readily with your interpretation if it was done at the upfront?
Not necessarily, Your Honor. I mean, if we...
They're just... Okay. They're just going to have the internal desire to please the court.
No, they're not going to have the internal desire, but maybe the purpose... Someone who really wants to get expungement and doesn't know if they're going to get it, right, maybe thinks they need to work just a little bit extra hard to get...
What's the purpose of uncertainty, though? What's the good purpose for uncertainty? Why not... Isn't it better to have certainty from the beginning?
I'm not sure it's better to have certainty from the beginning. And the circuit court can certainly have the defendant have that certainty from the beginning if that's what the circuit court desires.
Well, I framed that question poorly, but you've responded to it in a way that satisfies my question.
Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. On behalf of the court, I want to thank both counsel, all three counsel, Ms. Gerard, Ms. Lamb, and Ms. Remington, for your arguments today on yet another sentencing case, but quite different than the ones we have been hearing. And that concludes our oral argument in 12 AP 1582 CR, State versus Andrew J. Matasik. The court is in recess until next week, when it will have additional oral arguments, and the court will meet in closed session at 3:15. We are in recess.